So, yeah, I'm here with Heather Lowry on the podcast. This is
awesome.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you on. I was at Murphy's, I guess, last year, and I saw you, and I was like, I should have her on the podcast. I don't know if she's going to do it, because, like, not that you're never around anymore, but you come in and out of doing comedy, and I never know your schedule and what you're going to be doing, so I was like, would she even want to do it? I got in my head, I was like, she probably won't want to do it.
This is season 12.
Yeah, because I've been doing it for, like, 6 years almost, but the way that the app works is, like, every 30 episodes, it makes a new season. So I've interviewed over 150 comedians now.
That's
and it's just nuts. It's really is crazy. And it has just been really, really cool to get all these comedians on, and I get
Who is your favorite?
My favorite? I probably... probably the ones I did with Dan Caprio. We did like four of them.
Where is like Dan five of them. Now? Is
he's he's in California now. Living with his mom, I think, now.
Poor
it's
mom.
It's very tough for him. Yeah, he can't really do comedy, like, because he doesn't really have the schedule to anymore.
Okay.
And, he's working on a novel. it's like a detective novel. It's like a noir novel. I read it and I was like, oh, you know how to write. I was like, your grammar's good.
The thing is, though, I think, know what Dan should do? He should do his book on audio.
Yeah, he should.
Read his own book.
Read his own book.
And then I would buy it only if he gave it to me for free.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's... Yeah. Okay,
but I did episodes like with him.
So Dan was your favorite, and who was
favorite
your...
Favorite or favorite?
Who's your least favorite?
I don't know. I can't really say. I've had a few people that I don't...
It's okay. You don't have to
I have a few people.
Say.
The only bad thing...
Ryan St. John was your least favorite.
No, he was good. The only thing that's bad is people that don't talk, because I had that a lot. Like, I had that a few times. And that just... I took that on myself of, like, oh, I need to ask better questions.
Well, see, that's what I was wondering.
I had to get better as an interviewer, because also, like, the one thing that kind of drives me kind of nuts about this is it's not as funny as I want it to be, but it's very much like you get an inside look at the comedian. So it has helped people with their booking, but I feel bad because the episodes are kind of, they're not boring, but they're not, like, always funny.
That's not just all on you.
Joe McAndrew was very funny on his episode.
All right.
He was
this
hilarious.
This
is just name droppings. But you are, you've been on here. You know, it's so cool to have you on here the first time.
Thank you.
And it's so great because you know, we started doing improv together. I wanted to know how you knew, Mike.
Oh my God. Okay. Mike O'Keefe? How do I know Mike? I think I probably saw him in improv jam in Red Bank. I think Mike came to, like, my school in high school. And I don't know if Gordon was with him at the time. But I saw Gordon.
Oh, Gordon Bakerone, yeah.
I saw Gordon and Mike O'Keefe together in Red Bank. And then I don't even know how we crossed paths again. Because, like, what year was that? You said
2009? Yeah.
2009.
It's so weird.
Okay. So then I just moved back from Florida at that time. And then I guess I ran into him. And he was like, hey, I'm teaching improv classes at a teenage club in Point Pleasant. And I was like, okay, that sounds fun.
Right.
And then I show up and there you are. It's all just teenage boys.
All just teenage boys, yeah.
Me.
In that weird nightclub thing. And
it was like a teen nightclub.
Yeah. I remember I'd been there like 2 years ago because the kid... that I went to high school with had a bar mitzvah there, and they had like a party there, and I was like, this is cool, it's like a nightclub for kids, it's like very cool. But he taught improv, like the drama class, in middle school. And that's how I met him.
Okay.
And it was just like a few years later, I was in high school and I was in the singing program.
Okay.
And it was like closer to the end of the summer.
So, like, you were in chorus?
No, it wasn't chorus. It was, like, singular, like, singing by yourself.
Interesting.
Like, really cool. Like, in this neighborhood, there's this girl, Carrie Fletcher. She lives in this neighborhood. She was on in that class, and she was on X Factor. And, like, yeah, she's, like, a big singer now.
Okay.
It's crazy. But,
very
like,
cool.
I did that for a while, and it was... I was okay of a singer. Like, I'm terrible now, but I was okay.
It's just a muscle you
it's
have
a muscle
to work.
That you have to work. Same thing with comedy. But I saw the flyer, and I had known about it from, like, my sister never did it, but her generation of people, she's, like, 3.5 years older than me, did it.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, I can do improv. Because my thing was I wanted to get into comedy, but I had no idea how to do it. And singing only made me, like, realize, oh, I can't, I'm not afraid on stage anymore. And it's like, okay, I can do this. And then doing improv, I learned how to fail on stage because there were people that had so much experience. And then people just in their, like, older than me, like
it's
in their 20s.
It's such a different type of comedy, though.
Yeah.
It's such a different type of comedy.
It is.
It's, I mean, I wouldn't, I would probably say I am equally mediocre at both.
Oh, yeah, me too. I would say that too. Improv, I was, the one thing that was, you know, cool about it to me was that I was just surrounded by people who were amazing at it. So, like, I could just, it made me more comfortable to fail on stage than it did when I started to do stand-up. I was like, oh, this is all on me now.
Yeah, 100%.
This is all on me now. Yeah, 100%. And just, I was, it made me fast on my feet. Like, we'll do, I'll be at, like, a mic or something.
Like, literally or metaphorically.
Yeah. I'll be at, like, a mic or something, and someone will, like, ask for a random, like, suggestion, and I'll have it, like, immediately. I'll be like, that's just improv for so many years.
But it helps, yeah.
It helps
you.
Just think on the spot.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially, like, for stand-up, when you have something happen, like, the mic breaks, or, like, a heckler pops in. Like, improv helps you with being, like you said, quick on your feet.
Oh, yeah, quick on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious, like, how did you transition to stand-up? Like, what was that like?
Well, when I did stand-up in Florida before I moved here back to New Jersey. I'm originally from New Jersey. From 17 to 25, I lived in Tampa, Florida. And I always wanted to be a comedian. Like, my, you know, like, in, like, the first day of kindergarten, they're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I was like, I either want to be a marine biologist or a stand-up comedian. And they were like, okay.
Wow. That's two major, major things to want to
and
do.
And they were like, because I, you know, seeing Jim Carrey and Robin Williams, I'm like, oh, okay. I'm not weird. There's other people that act like me in public. Are these my dads? No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
But like,
I know what you mean.
So in Tampa, Florida, I had a friend who was doing stand-up comedy there at Side Splitters. And I was like, I'm just, before I moved back to New Jersey, I was like, my goal is to do comedy. So then Side Splitters is where I did stand-up for the first time. And I ran the light by like 3 minutes. Because I was telling a joke with my eyes closed. And the open mics down there, the room was packed. There's probably 80 people there. Like, you felt like you were in a show.
Right.
But, and there was, like, 45 comics signed up.
Like,
and if you were a regular there, you would get bumped. So I originally signed up as number 7. It's my first time ever doing comedy. I was ready to go. And then they kept bumping me and bumping me. And then I ended up getting, like, wasted by the time I go up. And I'm telling this joke with my eyes closed, and they're just lighting me at the back of the room. And my friend Kyle was like, don't turn the mic off on her, because that's what they do when you run the light there. They turn the mic off on you. He's like, don't turn the light off on her. It's her first time doing comedy. Just give her. She'll close it up. So they ended up giving me 3 extra minutes.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is nice.
Yeah, that's
but
nice.
But for other comics who had to keep, like, their solid 5 minutes, they were just like, who the hell does this girl think she is? Running, like, the light and then continuing with the mic. And I got off stage and people were, like, high-fiving me. And, like, people were like, whoa, you're, like, amazing. And I was like, well, this is addictive. And
right.
You guys are too kind.
Are too kind, yeah.
Too kind. And then I moved back to New Jersey literally the next day, I swear. And then I didn't do comedy for 5 years.
Oh.
And I saw Angelo Gingerelli do a show at the showroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my best friend Heather at the time, and we saw Angelo. And I think he had J.C. Hendricks.
Oh, yeah.
Joey Massaro. I think I said his name right. Joe McAndrew.
Yeah.
And maybe Andrew Lawson. I don't know,
oh,
but
wow.
It was like four you know, four.
That is
very
a
like
ragtag
group of guys. Solid.
Yeah,
it was
solid
four
group of guys. Yeah.
Very solid comedians at that time. They were, you know, very involved with like the community. And then, so we saw them do a show there. And then I was managing Ocean Cafe in Long Branch at the time. And Angelo came in with his wife Ambar, and I was like, "Hey, I saw you at the show the other night." And Angelo to this day still is like, "That's the only time I've ever been recognized for comedy." I was like, "Shut up." But I was like, "Do you know of any comedy open mics around here? I would like to get back into comedy." And he was like, "Oh yeah, I run an open mic at the bank."
Oh.
And I was like, "Oh, okay." And that's the bank on Madison.
It
was the second time I've ever done stand-up comedy, and it was Angelo's open mic.
Yeah, because the first time I ever did, well, the first, like, time I ever did stand-up was when we were doing improv. We were doing it, we ended up doing it a lot at Where Music Lives. That's
okay.
Sort of that music hall of fame.
Yeah.
And we would have, like, the A team, no, we'd go on, like, the B team, and then the A team would go on, like, later at night. And before it, like, a couple of comedians, local comedians, like Mark Henley and Joe McAndrew would open, and Mike knew that I wanted to do stand-up originally. So he's like, "Do you want to do it?" And I'm like, "Yeah." So that was, like, 2015. I'd been in improv since, like, 2009. I was like, "Yes, I want to do stand-up."
So you were solid in improv that
yeah,
whole time.
I wanted to do stand-up, but I just had no...
Okay.
I didn't know about open mics. Like, if someone just told me that open mics existed, I probably would have done
yeah,
it a whole lot quicker.
Young, though.
Yeah.
You were young.
Yeah,
like,
so
how old were
so
you
when I started
you
doing when I started
stand-up.
Doing stand up, I was 22.
Yeah, like that's
no, 21 and a half, yeah.
Yeah, that's
so like 21 and a half, 22. Close to 22.
And
yeah.
Then you were doing improv from so I met you were how old? 15?
Probably like yeah, probably close 15, to 16,
16-ish. Yeah.
And then in like 2011-ish, we were doing we moved to doing from that kid like space, that kid club space to the Count Basie theater.
Oh,
we were up there,
cool.
And that was where I met Molly Miller. And you know, she was in her 20s, like you know, I met her before
oh,
we did stand up.
So
me and her, and she had her friend Sarah, who is so hilarious. And both of them, they just made me die laughing every time I was there. It was hysterical. Just, I was like,
okay, so
17
you met
around that
Molly
time.
Through improv as well.
Yeah.
But at the Count Basie.
At the Count
That's
Basie.
That's a pretty cool venue.
Yeah, it was like right above. And then after that, we had moved to, you know, Where Music Lives, and that's where I started doing stand-up from there, and I just
bombed. Oh, yeah,
because
Where Music Lives, did you know that that used to be the original showroom?
Oh, that used to be the showroom.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That used to be the original showroom. And then that's where, were you in the improv class with me when it, yes, what is it called?
Where Music Lives, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that used to be the original showroom, and they would just have a pull-down screen and lawn chairs.
Right.
And then Mike and Nancy eventually bought it across the street, and then that's when it became that venue you're
right.
talking about. And then I did improv again there. And then you were in that class too,
yeah.
Right?
And then when I was,
oh my God, what's his name?
When I started,
is it Dylan?
Yeah, Dylan was the one. Dylan Monegan, he does improv, like he does comedy
okay.
sports
okay.
now, like the real like improv competitions. He was the one who actually told me about the open mics. He told me about Crust and Crumble, and that's where I went for my second time.
Okay.
And I met everybody, and it was like, I was like, oh, this is my people. Like these are my people,
and
it was odd because I was younger than everyone, like, pretty
by
much.
By, like, 10 years.
Yeah, close to 10 years, like,
yeah.
5 to 10 years. Like, you know, Jack was, like, 23.
No way no. Jack was 23.
No, he was, like, 27. But, like, it was funny.
Oh, my God.
I remember, you know, I have a funny story about that. I said to him, he said to me, the first time I ever met him, "I'm quitting comedy." And then I said to him last year, he said to me, "I'm quitting comedy." I said, "You know what the first thing you ever said to me when I met you when I was 22? That you're quitting."
All right, that's all the time Jack
yeah.
gets on
yeah, all
this
the time Jack gets.
Special.
But it's
oh my
it's
God.
Just cool to like look back in the past and
yeah.
everything. Like I have written here, like you do in Brighton Bar. Like that, you were one of the first people that sort of did
Bar.
Stuff there.
Well, yeah, I started it.
Yeah, you started it.
I mean,
They were fantastic.
Yeah, it was, oh my gosh. Yeah, oh my, I don't even know. Yeah, so that's, so how the Brighton Bar open mic started is Greg Macalino was my history teacher in middle school. So I've known Macalino since like the 90s. And when I was getting into stand-up at that time, so these were the mics that were available to like the Shore comics. It was the Bank on Madison, and then Crust and Crumble, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, I don't think I did Bank on Madison. I don't think I ever got to do that one. I know we had one at this place we did that.
So you did. Scratch was what the Bank became afterwards.
Oh, it became afterwards. Oh, okay.
Because I was like, I remember you there.
Because I remember there's this guy, I forget his name. I always forget his name, that ran that, the Scratch mic.
Oh my gosh. And he was like, I couldn't even remember nowadays. God, but, that was like a decade ago.
Yeah. It feels like it. Was like crazy. And then that was just it. So many
so,
people.
Like, a lot of, like, getting into comedy, like, I went full throttle. When I finally, like, started doing comedy again after that first time doing it, Side Splitters, then I did, like, a 5-year hiatus, and then, like, I started doing it, and then I was like, oh, this is so much fun. This is so addicting. Like, I want to do it all the fucking time. But there was nothing in the area for us. Like, we had to drive at least 45 minutes, an hour, either to go to Philly or to go, like, to North Brunswick or go to the city. Like, so at the time, there was a big open mic that Gordon was running, 10th Street.
Yeah, 10th Street. I did that as, like, one of my first times, like, very early.
Yeah.
And the thing that was fun there was I was bombing pretty badly, and when I started to, like, when
I did it once, and I did not do
the thing that was really cool is when I started being feisty to the audience during my set, they loved it. They, like, I had a little bit of an attitude that came out in my set, and they liked it. They liked being, like, I was like, you guys are fucking terrible. You're a terrible audience, and they just loved it, and they ate it up.
They liked the sassy version of you.
I was like, okay, and that's where I wanted to be, like, a little bit tougher on stage, because you gotta have that.
Yeah, and so, like, and I guess, where else, like, I was going to a mic in Trenton on a weekly basis at the Trenton Social, which was run by Ben and Chelsea.
Yeah, I went there one time.
Yeah, so I was there weekly, and you want to talk about, like, a tough crowd. Like,
that's that was tough.
Crowd. And that was one of the only times where I felt like a heckler was getting kind of, like, not, like, violent, but, like, pretty aggressive towards me. And I'm like, of course I'm in Trenton. And this guy was just coming at me, like, pretty heavy from, like, the side of the room. And then I was just, I'm from Long Branch, you know, like, I'm from a town where we fight for fun. Yeah. So it was interesting because it brought out a side of me that I was like, oh, like, I can defend myself and be funny.
And be funny, yeah.
And, but, all, like, it was just so, that was, like, the mics that I was doing at the time. And I was like, okay, 10th Street was retiring. And there was nothing going on Mondays anymore. And I remember thinking, I'm like, oh, where are all those comics going to go on a Monday night now? And then that's when I had Greg Macalino. I said, hey, Mac, what do you think about me doing just a strictly comedy open mic on Mondays? Because also open mics aren't always for, they're not open mics, they're restricted mics. Like you, it's either, you know, if it's an acoustic open mic or spoken word or poetry, where comedians are not welcome at every open mic, which is understandable. I get it. We're like cockroaches. But it's like, so I was like, Macalino, I just want a strictly comic open mic, even though, like, the Brighton Bar was the home of original music. So he was like, okay, but if someone comes here and with an instrument and wants to play, he's like, you got to give them mic time. I said, yeah, of course, that's no problem. I said, but we're billing it as comedy open mic. And then Macalino was like, can you bartend? And I was like, what? He's like, okay, how about you host and you bartend, and then Monday nights are yours. And I said, Macalino, I've never hosted a comedy open mic, and I've never bartended. And you want me now to do both? And then, so he had me bartending and hosting a comedy open mic. The first mic we ever did at the Brighton Bar, I think we had like 30 comics show up. And I was in a sequin gold dress. And I had Sebastian, who was helping out. Well, he was the bartender at the Brighton Bar at the time. But he helped out that night. And like we just like cut my dress up because I couldn't run back and forth every 5 minutes.
Right.
So I remember telling Macalino, I said, listen, this, we need to get another bartender in here. I can't, like, Monday nights, I can't just bartend, and it's just impossible. So Mike, remember Mike?
Yeah.
So Mike then started to be with us on Monday nights, and it was perfect because, you know, that Brighton Bar open mic community, like, it wasn't just, like, the comics. It was also, like, the Brighton Bar OG. Like,
oh, yeah.
Timmy. And,
yeah, Timmy, all those
and
guys.
And Russ, and, yeah. You know, and Mike. And so I did that. So that's how it started. So we had Jersey Shore Comics had a place to go Monday night, so we didn't have to drive so far away.
Right.
And then I did it every single Monday for exactly 1 year, and then I retired it and then passed it on to Angelo, who then ran it for 2 more years.
Right.
So that open mic technically had a 3 year.
It had a 3 year thing.
3 years.
It runs. And the really cool thing was, you know, when we had started, like I always say this, and I don't mean it in a negative way, I mean it in like a really cool way, is when we were starting, like, I came in a year or like maybe 2 years after everyone started doing comedy.
Okay.
Like the original people. Okay. So it was like 2015, people started like 2013, 2014, I guess.
Okay.
And that was like our original thing. And the thing with Angela that was really cool with him was Mike's would, you know, show up.
Are you talking about like the original comedians at the Brighton like, Bar open mic?
Like all those people. Like that started in like 2013-ish, I think. Okay. And then I came in like 2015.
Okay.
And like Angelo just had, like he was in the middle of his like, starting to do mics. Like, he would do them, and then they would go away, and something would happen.
That's because Angelo...
like...
Angelo has, like, this little curse on him, and he knows...
Yeah, he has
like,
a curse,
it's
yeah.
It's like, he would do an open mic, and then the place would shut down.
Right.
So, oh my god.
So, we had, at Porta was when,
Angelo's the reason why the Brighton Bar got shut down. I'm just kidding. I don't even want to say that. But he would then, have pitchforks outside his house.
Oh, yeah.
The Brighton Bar, like, people can't even talk about it. Like, not just because what it did for comedy, but, like, you know, it's just, you know.
Like, I love it because it was, like, this hub of, like, everyone went there that I had met over the years. So it was, like, all these new people, all these people that I started with that were original people that I started with. And, it just became, like, a hub of, like, everyone.
It would be interesting because I would have, like, you know, like you said, like the OG crew, which is like Dan Caprio, yeah, like
Molly,
like Carl, Molly, you know. So when you said that, I was like, who is he? And well, I was like, yeah, there was.
I guess
Vin
you mean
Brew.
Before Carl was like Vin
well,
Brew.
Vin Brew
was.
Do you know that's
at,
his first time ever.
That was his first time. Yeah,
it was at the Brighton
Bar. First time in New Jersey. Yeah, and that was great. And he really gave a lot of credit to you when I had him on the podcast last time.
Oh, stop.
I had him on recently for the third time, which is like crazy.
The third time!
Because we talked about his music.
Which is the one that he talks about me? Because then I'll listen.
It was a recent one. So he was just like, he just gave you a lot of credit for, because I don't know if you know who Dave Hill is. He's like a famous comedian musician in California. He started having Vin do comedy, and then Vin came to New Jersey and did it.
Oh, interesting. So, okay.
The first time he did comedy, he like opened for a professional comedian.
That would
which is insane. Like, and he did pretty well. Yeah, but that's like exactly what happened.
But he's a natural.
Yeah, he's a natural.
He's just a natural king of the quirkies. You know what I mean? He's just. And that's where, like, and it was just when I retired, like, that mic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was exactly 1 year, and, like, I didn't tell anybody, and because, like, people don't realize, like, that I struggle with, like, my own mental illness, like, having that mic going every single Monday,
right.
Like, it wasn't every third Sunday of the month,
right.
Like, I did it
no,
every
you did.
Single week, and it would be a lot of time. And the thing is, though, like, a lot of people would confide in me. So, like, I'd have to, like, I'd get hit with, like, some heavy personal stories.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then I'm, like, trying to light somebody while someone's trying to, like, talk to me about their set last week. Or
right.
A lot of people were, I don't want to say, like, they were scouting. I was going to say poaching. Like, they were scouting the Brighton Bar open mic because they felt like it, a lot of people had their first time doing comedy there.
Oh, yeah.
Because they felt so, like, oh, this is the weird place.
This is a weird place.
The Misfits. Like, everyone's pretty welcoming here, and everyone's weird.
Right.
So, like, there was, like, a lot of people that did their first there because they felt safe enough and comfortable enough. And I loved it. Like, I, you know, like, it, I don't think I'm going to realize how much of an impact it has until maybe even later in life.
Oh, yeah.
Because some people will share with me every now and then, like, what the place meant to them. I'm like, holy shit, I was just so busy.
Right.
That, like, it just didn't dawn on me. And then certain Mondays, there's only two times that I ever did not do the mic in 1 year.
Right.
Two times. Because I was going to kill myself. Like, I can't.
No,
like,
I remember that.
I cannot. And then I turned to Vin Brew and then Don Harris those two times.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, I don't talk about, like, my mental health on a level that some people do. I do talk about it because I'm open about it. But, like, people don't really know my demons.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew I could turn to Vin Brew. And Don Harris is Long Branch, so Ben Brew's now Long Branch, too.
Right.
But, like I knew Don Harris before comedy, so I knew I could turn to those two people and be like, listen, I cannot do this tonight. And they showed up.
Right.
But for a solid year, I did it, and then I was like, I'm just going to cut the cord, and people were like, what? Mm-hmm. What do you mean? And I was like, I'm retiring. And they're like, are you going to pass the mic on to somebody? Or are you just going to close the mic down? Because this is, like, people's livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I'm going to blow my brains out. So I can't figure it out, guys. So Angelo was my only choice. And if Angelo was going to say no, then I was going to cut the cord.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, like, I cultivated that from literally nothing. And I knew that people look forward to that mic.
Yeah, they did.
Like, it wasn't, like, we hung out afterwards.
We hung out afterwards. It was a great hang. The one thing that I always kind of missed that we did, like, I'm kind of happy that we didn't do it, but also sad that we didn't, like, film more stuff. Like, of us hanging out, of us, like, if we had, like, you know, a video crew with us, it would be kind of cool, like, to have, like, this mini documentary thing of all these people just, they would become, like, just fixtures of the place, and they would have their name written on the wall next to the musicians, and it was just, like, it was so cool, and everyone just kind of recreated our own thing. And
that's, like, open mics, people are usually, they cut out after their set.
Right.
Where a lot of people hung out afterwards in the back patio when it was warm enough, you know? And then people would just shoot the shit and catch up.
Yeah, I mean.
And, like, even when the cool kids showed up.
Oh,
you know
what?
I don't have to say anyone's names, but even when the cool kids show up, they'd be like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then they would hang out.
Then they would hang out, yeah.
And then that's where it's, like, you know, that's where you really get to, like, enjoy being a comedian, because then you're surrounded by your peers of, like, screwed up people who know how to turn it into fun.
Yeah.
So when I did cut it off, I mean, it wasn't easy for me, and I had to do it quick and fast. And I was like, Angelo, it either has to be you or nobody.
Right.
And I do regret not talking to Mike, the bartender Mike, about it, because I know he was really upset with me about just bailing.
Right.
But the thing is, like, people don't realize, like, comedians' mental state.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, people are always like, oh, yeah, don't comedians deal with, like, depression? And be like, yeah, they deal with depression, but it's also, like, like, we get on stage in front of strangers.
Right.
Because we think we can make these strangers laugh. Like, are we not all right. sociopaths?
And like, yeah, of course. You know? Like, yeah. I mean, to me, it's so weird that I started doing comedy because as a person, especially growing up, I was not a shy kid at all by any means.
Okay.
But I just didn't like to draw attention to myself. I viewed like any sort of attention from adults as negative of like, oh, I'm going to be in trouble or whatever.
Okay.
And the only reason I really did it was because I started to be funny in my regular life. And that was, you know, just me. That was more of a survival of I was getting funnier and like sassier as opposed to all the bullying I was dealing with, which was very, very hardcore. And it was just, like, a way for me to, like, people saw that I was clever. Like, I would say things in class, like, fighting back, that I would probably be supposed to be getting in trouble for what I was saying, but it would make the teachers laugh with how clever I was.
Nice.
And it'd be like, so this is what I can do. And it was just sort of,
yeah,
like,
and once you
a
get
way to
that,
fight back.
Once you get that hit of laughter,
yeah.
You're just like, oh, how do I like, bottle this up?
And it's like, oh, you're not the weird person anymore. You're like the funny person. So it's like that changes too, where it's like, oh, I don't have to be like this person that people think is like eccentric and weird. Mm-hmm. Of like, oh, no, they like this person. And that is hard because also the big thing is like, how much we tie our self-worth to being a comedian is really tough. And that can be unhealthy, too. Because you want to establish yourself as a comedian, like, over time.
God, and it's you're a like, lot of work.
And you get stuck.
It's a lot
and
of work.
And when you have stuff on top of, like, depression and anxiety, which I have, like, I talk about it, you know, pretty earnestly about what happened to me, when I was in my junior year
of high school, okay,
it was like going into that year. It was actually in the middle of like my sophomore. Between that time, I had this schizophrenic break.
Okay,
in it's called schizophreniform, where you have like schizophrenia for like either a month or like 6 months. I had it for 3 months.
Wild.
And I didn't have to go like to a mental hospital or anything. My parents took care of it.
Aww,
but
you
we
got
took
good
care
parents.
Of home. Yeah, it was very
Some
good.
Some parents would have just dropped their kids off.
Yeah,
house.
And
yeah.
just be like, yeah, like just. But
take care of my
it was,
multiple sons.
I had this. I don't remember it at all, but I had this like freak out in my history class.
Oh man!
And like, I don't remember anything of it, what I said or anything, but it was bad enough for me to like get sent home. And I have no memory of it. It's completely like wiped. But it was just a three-month period of insomnia, not eating. I went from, you know, I was heavier, like, not very heavy, but I was chubby, and I went from, like, 170 pounds, which was, like, I was chubby, and then I went down to 150, and that
yeah,
was, like,
that's a big difference.
And that was a big difference, and it was really scary, because I would have these moments of lucidness, and I would be, like, once I had the moments of lucidness, I was so apologetic to everybody. I would come back into it. It was like snapping out of something. I'd be like, I'm normal for like 2 seconds. The only thing I could do was apologize for how I was acting.
Man.
And I had just really bad hallucinations, which was very scary. Because like hallucinations is crazy.
Like what would you see?
Just,
like
just weird shit. Like, you know.
Like cartoons?
Yeah, like. You'll be like, really? I know that purple elephant, you know, like, intellectually, you're like, I know that purple elephant is not on the couch, but I see it.
Oh, and man. It's like, so what's the explanation for that?
It was just...
Something in your brain,
well,
just
it
like...
was that, and I wasn't sleeping, I was on Facebook all the time.
Okay,
because
so lack of sleep.
What had happened, yeah,
really
I was on Facebook all the time.
Because
what had happened was I had become, during that period before it happened, I finally, like, got in the popular group. Like, I wanted to be in the popular group my whole entire, like, time at school. And then I got in that group, and it just, like, it made things worse. It just made my mental health worse. And the thing that was, I always tell myself, it was like a TV show. It was like a lesson. It was like, oh, these people are assholes. Why do they ever want them to like me? But
yeah,
that was
well,
a big
thing. Because they got all the attention.
Yeah. And
know?
Then once I got that and got in that group and got in that, everything just became too pressurized.
Yeah.
Like I
never was a part of like one group. I was like friends with everybody, but
right.
like I was, like, never, like, I wasn't, like, the pretty girl. Like, I'd be, like, the funny, chubby, pretty girlfriend.
Well, you know what? And you know, it's interesting. So, like, those were all my friends. Like,
I thought I was chubby. I look back at pictures now and I was 10.
Same. But it's like, it's like I look back at myself like, I'm so skinny. Why didn't my doctors make me think I was?
I know.
It's so crazy the, what's it called? The bias morphia people can give you at that age is, God. It's like criminal what they can do to
people.
Even
now, though.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other bonkers thing. Yeah. But, so back to the Brighton Bar.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
No.
But what's also crazy about it, because then Carl Cullen.
Yeah.
I did it again. I signed him up for the open mic the other night as Cullen.
Oh, as Cullen. You know what's funny? It's
Callen. Carl Callen.
I know his real name now as Mike. Sorry, I don't mean to talk
as
over
Carl.
You. Yeah.
That, he's Carl.
Yeah, he's Carl.
But, like, and, you know, Carl and Kelsey, like, were then doing shows there as well. And then other people were doing shows.
Other people were doing
there.
Shows, yeah.
And it's crazy because I feel like comedy and Macalino Sunday when he did, like, dinners and stuff is what carried the Brighton Bar through COVID, you know? Because, like, still certain things were going, like, the open mic was somewhat happening and, like, the Sunday dinners was happening. So it's, like, even though, like, the Brighton Bar is the home of original music, like, it was, like kind of like the underground comedy club.
Well, that was really cool to me. I think it was one of the newspapers. I don't know if it was the local paper, if it was Long Branch, or if it was Belmar's, like, paper. But they gave us, like, an award of, like, comedy club.
Oh, I think I remember what you're talking about.
And it was
about.
Like, that's cool that we were recognized as a comedy club. I was like, that's really awesome.
Oh, man, I wonder if we could find that still.
Yeah.
That would be a cool
Angela
thing.
Probably knows where it is.
Angela probably has the original
probably
copy.
Has the original copy, yeah.
Yeah.
I just remember that happening.
That's pretty cool. Because you're right. Like, I do, there's times where I'm very heavily in the scene.
Right.
And then I disappear.
And then you disappear.
And then I just show up randomly again, and then I disappear. And it's just because I have a very bonkers life.
Oh, yeah, like, for sure.
My personal life is bonkers. Like, I was just living in New Hope for the past year, but then I was doing comedy at John and Peter's.
Oh.
And then I ran into Angelo at Damien's open mic, which is now Liam's open mic.
Which is now Liam's, yeah.
And then I saw Angelo, like, a couple of weeks ago, and that's when I was like, you know, then I was there, like, every single Monday, because it's either, like, all or nothing with me. And Angelo said something really freaking cool to me the other day, and he was like, I'm really sorry for what happened to you, which you know what I'm talking about. And he was like, it's really great for you to be back here with the community.
Right.
And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, shut up, Heather. But you know, like, it's like, I love the history that we have.
Yeah.
So, next question.
So, no, I have so much that
I
didn't even
see.
Get to get to. So
I
was
know.
Like,
so let's
so
get to your.
Here's what I had. You're coming back. We're basically in that period. You're coming back now, which is really awesome.
I mean, I'm trying.
You're trying. You know, you shouldn't feel too weird about, you know, coming and going, because that's a common thing with comedians is people either are in full time or they just come back every once in a while.
Yeah, like, I do get envious of, like, Brian St. John.
Yeah.
He's just, like, he's just been solid.
Yeah.
Doing, I don't know
I saw
how
him recently.
He's not dead.
No,
like, I don't know how he's just still, like.
I saw him recently at one of Joe McAndrew's shows, and he was, you know, he'd been doing comedy in, you know, New York. Like, he was so much more polished than he ever been, and he was just, like, so
was
much better.
Was he sober?
I think so. It came up like he was, but who knows? He could have been drinking.
That's good, but, you can always tell, though.
Right.
When, I mean, you know how it is.
Yeah.
Like, if you do comedy consecutively, you get that confidence, and
right.
then you get polished. But then if you don't do comedy for, like, 3 months, it's, like, 10 years.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then when you don't do it for, like, you know, like, it's just, like, comedy ages in dog years.
Right.
And then you're rusty when you get back on the stage.
Right.
And So I'm trying to find a balance of like getting back in the community, but not throwing myself into where I'm drowning and then I disappear again.
Right. And it seems like you've always been really good at finding the right people to hang out with. And like, you know, that can be the hardest thing in comedy. You know, to me, I'm like, I've always had different periods of people that I've hung out with. Yeah. And I just thought it was cool. Like, I saw that you were doing stuff with Caitlin at her Madison.
Yeah, I know Caroline, and then she connected me up with Caitlin.
Yeah.
And that show, dude, I almost, like, that was, like, the first show I did in a while. And I almost did not show up.
Oh, did not show up.
I almost did not. There's been so many times, and I'm like ashamed to even say where I've been booked on a show, name on a flyer, ready to go. I promote, and then 40 minutes before I'm supposed to leave, I have so much anxiety to where I'm going to black out. And then I'm like, I can't come. And they're just like, so I almost did that with that show, and my roommate Leandra came with me, and then once we got over the bridge to get into Madison, I went into instant anxiety, and I was going like 35 miles per hour. And she was like, pull the fuck over. And then she drove, and then when we got there, I just was like, I felt like I was home. You know, it's like the microphone,
you
and
have
the
that,
lights, and like that. The stool, and like, you know, all of these elements, once I get to it, and once I get on stage, you wouldn't be able to tell, like, 20 minutes ago I was debating on going to the hospital.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's just, but
it's just that rush when you get on stage. Like, to me, I always had that anxiety on a major show. Like, now I'm pretty lucky that, like, I am pretty calm during, like, mics, but if there's a show, especially, like, if there's, like, if I'm gonna get paid, I'm like, I get so much anxiety. I'm like,
well, because people are paying,
people are like getting on top, getting to see you. And you know, the one thing that I love about your style of comedy that you do is you're like all or nothing. Like, you go straight into it. You're doing stories. You're doing like, well, the voices, you're singing. It's like, you really take advantage of the time, and I envy that. Because me, I'm always like searching for, okay, punchline, laugh. I need to hear the laugh every 5 seconds, or people don't love me. That's the like thing with me, is like, I need to hear the laughter. I don't know with you, it just seems like you take full advantage of whatever time you're given up there. And I really admire that.
Thank you.
And I was curious if you had any background in performing, like, before you did comedy, with theater or anything.
Yeah, like, I'm a theater kid, but I also did, like, chorus as well, and it's just always, but that's the thing, like, yeah, you see me singing now. I wasn't singing like this before I moved to New Hope. Like, do you remember me always sing? Did I always sing?
No.
Not so much.
You were very, you know,
I was always still theatrical.
You were theatrical. You were very dark in humor when I met you.
Yeah,
and
when I first
as a Sarah Silverman fan, I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, because I think, you know, when you're starting out in comedy, you wear, like, you're like comedians on the sleeve. Like, I was on your sleeve. Like, you act like your favorite comedians. I was so much, like, I look back at my stuff, like, from then even when I see things, I'm like, I'm so Marc Maron. It's, like, sickening. But it's like, I just would get that, you know, the Sarah Silverman thing from you. And it was cool. Like, you would do a lot of dark humor, and that was really fun to watch. And it was just cool to see people in their, like, 20s living their 20s and living, like, the thing they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it's
very
cool.
I mean, you know, I'm
cool.
Almost 40, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like,
I know that.
I was like, you
that.
Know I'm not, like,
I know
one
how old
of the little
you are.
Ones.
I wouldn't say that.
I've been here for a while now.
Yeah.
But,
no.
Like, the singing
stuff. I'm
not going
to call you old. I'm not going to do that.
I'll be 38 next month.
Yeah.
But, like, the singing stuff, since I was in New Hope the past year, where we have the Bucks County Playhouse.
Right.
And I've, like, competed at the Bucks County Playhouse for theater, like, in high school.
Ah.
So, being in, like, the New Hope area where, like, you step outside and you can run into movie stars. The whole, like, the one block, it's just quirky and theatrical.
Right.
So I really felt like, I was like, oh, this makes sense. Like, I really enjoy being here. And then when I was on stage at John and Peter's for their open mic, like, I just started singing more.
Right.
And then now, like, I'm making sure I'm singing in every single...
every single set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's so much fun. Because, you know, it's just not just standing up there and me telling jokes
no,
at you.
You take it's, every opportunity to be funny. And I think, and also be silly and goofy. And I envy that so much.
I'm just having
fun. Yeah.
And that's what, like, I just want, if you are in the audience with me, like, I know I'm not going to be the funniest. Like, I know that. I'm not going to be like a Bernie Mac, make you piss your pants funny. It's just not who I am. But I'm... You know, like, whatever. Mediocre and memorable
is
my
epitaph.
You know? Like, yeah. It's just, like, I want to be memorable. Like, at the end of the night, I don't want people to be like, oh, yeah, like, well, the female comedian, like, oh, yeah, she was funny. Like, I don't want people to remember me as, like, the female comedian went up with five other male comedians. Like, I just want to be like, oh, yeah, they probably will just say the girl comedian.
No, but I'm...
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be remembered because I'm the girl comedian.
No, and I've become so, like, I try to be very, like, aware of how hard it is for women in comedy. Because I just know it. I see how people are treated and how women are treated.
Well, that's,
and it makes me so upset sometimes. I'm like... Where are we, like, it feels like we're living in the 1950s. I'm like, what's going on here?
And
like,
that's,
we should be so much more progressive than we are.
What's crazy, I think I was doing the shows there before I was doing the open mic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember.
I just remember, oh, Brighton.
I was doing when I first started doing shows at the Brighton, I was calling them No Balls Allowed.
No Balls Allowed, right.
And I was just... booking female comedians.
Yeah.
And then once I got to, like, the third show and stuff, I was like, oh, my God, like, this is – I kind of pigeonholed myself because there's not a lot of female comedians in the area. And then that's when I changed it to Heathens.
Right.
And then I would do certain editions, like Heathens Brown Eye Edition, Heathens Estrogen Edition,
mm-hmm.
Heathens Bearded Boys. Because then when I changed it from No Balls Allowed to Heathens, like, then I opened up the whole – like, the dating game show one was one of, like...
I forgot about that, yeah.
And
was really fun.
It was Tiz, Jason, and Brian St. John, and then Molly's friend Heather was, like, the girl.
Right.
And, like, I think back to those shows, I'm just like, God, I wish there was more footage, like, when you
Yeah,
talk
you just
that.
Wish there was more, like, I just wish
when,
that...
like, a photo pops up every now and then, it's like, oh, man, like, this is cool. This is super cool.
And you have such a love for, like, the local towns.
Yeah.
Like, you love Long Branch. You talk about it in your sets.
07740. Yeah.
So, and you have a lot of, like, stories that you'll tell about stuff. Like, I remember the story you told about the big fight that you had in high school and the girl becoming, like, a famous, like, boxer or something and being, like...
She's not famous.
Well, not famous, but, like, notable or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was just, like, you telling that story and... I guess you said that you were... I just had him on the podcast, Sean McDonough.
Sean.
And you said, like, you knew him, like, back then.
No, I only knew Sean.
Oh.
No, Sean I've only met through comedy.
Oh, through comedy? Oh, I thought you knew him when you were younger. Or said something like that you knew him when you were...
Did we? No, I don't think we've known each other.
Oh.
Oh, man. I adore Sean, and I love to see that he's, like... Just, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he just does. He's amazing at everything he's doing now.
Like, I love comedy.
Oh, yeah.
I love, like, one of my best friends, which is Alyssa,
mm-hmm.
like, is through comedy.
Right.
When I think about all the doors that comedy has opened for me is, like the friends I've had, the adventures
I've had. The
friends,
the adventures,
like,
yeah.
Just the memories is just, like, I feel very, very, like, blessed and lucky to, like, be a part of just the comedy community.
Right. Because I just see, like, I was going through some of your stuff on Facebook to see, like, if you're doing any shows lately, if you were, like...
Facebook?
You know, I was trying to, like,
so
look
inactive
at shit.
Yeah.
And, like, the other thing that I was looking at, just to be, like, sure, because I wanted to ask you, I didn't know if we were going to get into it, about your traveling and your, like...
Yeah.
The volunteering that you were doing. I was like, where's the places that she has been? Ask her about this. Ask her about South Africa.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot to talk about. But it's...
Because that's really cool that you do that stuff. And
well, in my 20s. I just wanted to, like, help the world.
Help the world, yeah.
And then I just depleted everything I had to give. And now by, like, my late 30s, I'm just like, can I just get to the supermarket and back? You know? Oh, like, yeah. It's just, well, that's, yeah, because it's just, like, how I am in life. I'm either in the scene or I'm not. Like, before I was, like, traveling, like, it was South Africa. And then 6 months later, I went to Switzerland. Six months later, I went back to Africa. And then, like, 12 months later, I went to Costa Rica because I was just like, I want to help, I want to help, I want to help. And then when I helped everybody else, I'm like, I don't feel good.
Just... No, that can happen. You know, you put yourself in so many situations where you help people and you're like, oh, I got to help myself. And...
Well, that's where, like, I didn't become a marine biologist. Mm-hmm. So when, like, that little girl in kindergarten was like, marine biologist and, you know, stand-up comedian, like, I do consider myself a stand-up comedian, yeah, even if I'm working or I'm not, because I invested almost a decade of my so much time life into it. Yeah. Into it. So when it came to, like, marine biology stuff, when I found out I can do the things that marine biologists do, but through volunteering, I was like, whoa. And then that's how I was able to, like, I volunteered through the Tampa Aquarium, and then I transferred to Jenkinson's, mm-hmm, and I was working with the penguins there, and they have a TV above, like, the exhibit that talks about a penguin sanctuary in South Africa, and they work, you know, predominantly on volunteers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I want to go do that. And then I went there for 2 months. So I was able to do things like marine biologists and then not invest my life to it because they get paid shit.
Oh, yeah.
To, like, do work that you is, like, unfathomable when you see, like, how horrible the world is to, like, right, animals. And then when you realize, like, it is just... I'm glad that I didn't become a marine biologist. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, so that's like the volunteering was still like feeding that desire to be a marine biologist. Mm-hmm. The end.
Yeah. That was just, you know, I wanted to ask you about that and get into that. Cause it's just cool. Like from the outside to see someone live their life and do all that stuff. And you know, you never know the day-to-day with people, too. It's like, you know, there's that
into it. You kind of forget that we're all, like, humans outside of, like, the open mic.
Because especially with comedy, there's so much, like, fear of missing out on stuff. You see shows going on, you're like, oh, I want to be doing this more. I want to be more involved. And then your life just doesn't put you in that perspective. Yeah. And you're like, okay, whenever I get the opportunity to do this, I'm just going to do it. And I think, you know... It's kind of, we always say this as comedians, but comedians are like a species. Like, we're just like, we have to do it. So,
we die.
Or we can't handle it, you know? Because the jokes have to come out somehow.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a fix.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, I can't help but notice you have meow written on your hand.
Yeah, my meow tattoo. Yeah.
When did you get that?
I just got this one a couple of months ago. Oh. In New Hope. Yeah, but I know. I remember, like, I freaked out before I got my knuckles done because I was like, this is in everyone's face. Like, this is going to be here till the day I die.
Now. Right.
It's kind of crazy. But it's also, like, I could die tomorrow.
No, it's fun. But
I like the meow.
Yeah.
It could also say, like, me.
Right.
It could say we.
Yeah.
It could say ow.
Right. Yeah. It's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, I like it a lot. That's really cool.
Dweck approves of my meow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Don't wait for it. So, did that. So, so what is, like, your thing? I was just doing comedy more, or what is sort of
what
you want to
do? Like, my world just got flipped totally upside down 2 months ago, mm-hmm, when, like, you know, my... You know.
Yeah, I know.
World got flipped upside down, and now I'm in Toms River, New Jersey, where I was just living in New Hope, which is like, you know, a fairy tale land. And I'm not saying Toms River isn't. It's just Toms River is more like Alice in Wonderland, and I'm just trying to just, like, I don't want to say that I'm at, like, one of my mentally lowest spots, but, like, I'm not doing so well mentally. So I'm trying not to just go full throttle and then end up really, like, not okay.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm trying to make sure, like, I'm getting to, like, an open mic at least every other week.
Every other week, yeah.
Because it's like, every Monday would be great to do it. But then it's like, then I get that anxiety.
Right. Because you constantly want to put stuff out. You constantly feel like it becomes work in a way of like,
well, because you want to get booked. You want to be a part of it. You want to get paid, which would be, you know, like getting paid for 5 minutes of your time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, are you kidding me?
No, I mean.
Like, everyone's getting a Netflix special nowadays.
It's wild.
Like, what is that? Like a $50,000 check?
Yeah.
For 20 minutes of your life?
Right.
And the comedians that are getting paid to do Netflix specials, I feel like I'm just watching mediocre comics at an open mic. And I'm like, you guys aren't even talking about anything.
Do you watch a lot of comedy still? Or?
So, I never watched comedy, really. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's always like, oh, you're a comic. Who's your favorite comedian? And I'm like, I don't really know. Like, I'm still, the older I get, I do want to educate myself more. Like, at a New Brunswick open mic one time at the Scarlet Pub, years ago, a guy came up to me. He's like, oh, my God, you remind me of Lenny Bruce. And I didn't even know who Lenny Bruce was at the time. And I go to Tiz, and I was like, Tiz, oh, my God. I was like, this dude just said I remind him of Lenny Bruce. And he was like, you don't even fucking know who Lenny Bruce is. I'm like, you're right. Who is he? And he was like, ah. Like, he was so annoyed that, like,
but
just some random person was like, oh, your style's Lenny Bruce. And I was like, who?
Yeah.
And now I'm just learning about Lenny Bruce.
Right, of course.
And, you know, like, I just got two of his records from Low Fidelic Records out in Belmar. And, like, now I just been, like, I'm making myself listen to, I collect comedy records, and I don't even listen
That's
to
fantastic.
Them.
That's fantastic.
So, like, I'm making myself listen to, like, the greats, like Richard Pryor.
Right.
Moms Mabley, like.
Oh, yeah, all those are.
I'm nannying, you know, Carl and Kelsey's son, and, like, I have him listen to. Like, we listened to Rapping Rodney the
other
day.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And, like, so I just think it's important to, like, I'm going to be doing this to the day I die, and I just want to learn more about the history
of
it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So even though if I'm not doing an open mic, as long as I'm getting comedy in my way.
In some way,
like this.
Yeah.
This counts.
Yeah, this counts, of
this
course.
This counts.
And
so that's where it's like, what I'm like, to say what my goal is right now, my goal is to not kill myself.
Oh, yeah, I get it.
And then, like, you know, make sure I'm getting some kind of entertaining mic time. I would like to do once a week.
Right.
I would like to get paid for a gig once a month.
Right, of
like,
course.
That would be
my
goal. And then, yes, it would be great to, like, I don't know, have shows where it's, like, I get, like, a six-figure check.
Right.
But that's...
That's,
like, a pipe dream, but you never
know. Yeah, it is a pipe dream, but you never know.
Like,
to me, when COVID happened, like, afterwards, after everything happened with that, because we were back pretty early at the Brighton Bar. We were back after 3 months. And, you know, what was actually funny was... we were the only ones, we were told that we were the only, like, people at bars that were following the rules. Everyone else at bars were, like, not wearing masks. We were the comedians, like...
Yeah, well, because...
We were wearing masks, we were using the mic condoms.
For that,
were, like...
Because people were doing shows through Zoom.
Yeah.
And I was, like, to me, I was, like, there's no way I would be able
I could never
to do
that.
That,
no.
There's no way. So, right now, comedy is on a hiatus, and that's that.
Yeah. So, when we came back, it was just that... And just doing that, you know, it's so when I came back last year, I did a show with Angelo at a brewery, I forget what it's called, in Red Bank. And then I did two other shows this year. And I was just like, I got paid from like very small amount, but it was just like, it was cool to have that. Of like,
even
okay.
If you get paid $20.
Yeah, 2015.
15.
It's like
$10.
Yeah.
Even if you get paid a beer.
And then like,
it's just cool.
And then like,
it's
I've been
cool.
selling T-shirts of my podcast, so that's
nice.
Been helping out. So it's like, it's
smart.
Just a little bit of that. So
smart.
You know, and to me, I'm just like, if I can just do this, because to me, I always get in my head about like, there's so many comedians around, so many great people.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of insecurity of like, oh, am I on the same level as these people, you know, am I gonna, like, it's not even, like, fitting in, it's, like, being a part of it is very tough, because you're, like, okay, am I, you don't want to just be added, like, just to be included. You want them to, like, view you as the same level. So that's the thing that I've always dealt with.
Comedy is pretty clicky.
It's very clicky.
Comedy
it's like,
is pretty clicky.
I remember, like, a couple years ago, like, 2018, they did Joe McAndrew and all those people, they did a show with Mark Normand. And I was like, if I stayed in that group, I would have been doing on that show. Like, I was like, that's what I thought. I was like, if I stayed in this group, but you just get switched around with different people that you meet and different friend groups. And I wouldn't trade that, those experiences of those different comedians that I hung out with. But it is a...
doing this.
Yeah. So I've been very lucky, like, you know, you talk about, like, I've been way more confident too at asking people to do it.
Good.
Because I never go, like, the bigger comedians that I've gotten on, I don't go through management. I just message them on Facebook as a comic.
Okay.
And they treat me like a comic. Like, it's so interesting. There's this guy that's huge on TikTok and everything. His name is Gianmarco Cerezzi.
Mm-hmm.
He's really, like, really successful now. And when I had him on the podcast, I just knew he was going to be huge. And he was working with Billy Crystal. He was doing a short film with Billy Crystal.
Nice.
And then the week after he was on my podcast, his Comedy Central half hour came out.
Whoa.
And he was on James Corden.
That's pretty
so
cool.
It was, like, really cool. And he was super nice to me because he just talked to me and treated me like a fellow comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we kind of put, like, these, like, different labels on people of, like, oh, they're a headliner. We're just, like, open micers.
Yeah,
but they,
like,
don't view it that way. Every professional comedian that I've talked to and had on the podcast or met, they view everyone that does comedy as comedians. Like, they don't really separate it as we do, as I used to.
Who's not gold.
Right.
But but I do know what you mean. It's like,
It was cool for them to recognize. Yeah.
Hierarchy.
But it was, it's nice to, like, see that even they don't really view that.
Treated you as his equal.
Yeah. And that was really cool to me. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome just to have that. So I mostly have people from New Jersey, but I've had people from different states come on. And, you know, it's interesting how much – the one thing that's just so annoying is how much comedians are treated better in different states. Like, they have more comedy clubs, and the comedy clubs are more welcoming to younger people.
Mm-hmm.
With here, like, the cool thing that we kind of talked about all the time is, like, we had to make, like, a punk rock, like, thing with the open mic scene. Because there was just not a lot of comedy clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And even the comedy clubs that are around, they're hard to get booked in and hard to get jobs in.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, you know. So that's why I give a lot of credit to someone like Angelo. It's like, we made this. We told people, we're going to become comedians. We're going to make our own shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, might not have a whole lot of people, but when people are there, it's like just this energy. And, like, you being able to do that with your stuff, with the Brighton Bar, and just give people that outlet. It's what we need, because it's so tough to, like, the business side of comedy I hate. It's like, and that's the one thing, like,
no, once money gets involved, it's a whole
and lot. I take a whole lot of, give you a whole lot of credit for the stuff you're talking about with having to bartend and having to host, because I could never do that. I hate hosting shows. I hate it.
Well,
because the thing that I hate about it is all the, like, all the pre-stuff, setting up, remembering people's names, remembering, like, their, like, when you introduce them, whatever credits you have to remember, and all that stuff. And, like, to me, it's like, I just started this to do comedy, and it's very tough, like, to do what you want to do and do sometimes what you have to do in comedy.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of, and it's just, it's growing up in it, you know. I think that was what has sort of been my thing of, like, I've been doing this since I was 16.
It's pretty cool. You've been doing this,
like,
since, like, your childhood years.
Yeah.
Like,
and whenever I get down on myself about, like, oh, I'm not progressing as fast enough, I have to remember that I've been
just count
young.
The people around you, like, and you'll be like, I'm doing just fine.
I'm doing just fine,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, you're
it's
in,
like,
your 12th season
of this.
Of your podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so,
like, doing this for a while.
Yeah.
And it's really cool, and I just try and, you know, get keep a good attitude about it, of course. You know, it can be so tough. You know, a lot of comedians deal with mental health stuff. I'm no different. I deal with a lot of shit. And it's like, you know, it's very tough because to me, I'm kind of different. It's kind of different now. I'm kind of losing this. But I used to, whenever I was really, like, depressed or anything would happen, I would go on stage and it would just make me feel better. Because I always just was, like, had that catharsis of if I went on stage. Because also being on stage is, like, so different to me. Because during the daytime, I'm not a very, like, social person.
Okay.
So, like, when I go on stage, that's, like, my time. It's like being a superhero, I always say. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
It's like you're your normal person during the day, and then you go on stage and you make people happy. And
that's your thing.
It's like, yeah. And, you know, it's so funny. People nowadays, they'll be, like, that are new to comedy, they'll be like, oh, you should come party with us after, like, after the mic. I'm like, I need to go home and, like, rest.
This took a lot out of me.
Took a lot out of me socially.
I need to take a nap now.
Yeah, It's like, I can't go party
afterwards. Maybe next week?
Yeah.
But probably not.
Probably like, not, no. Yeah. I just need to do this set.
But you're saying so nowadays you're not like that as much?
Nowadays I'm like, I also realize it's unhealthy, like in a way.
When you get depressed, you don't want to do anything.
Because if you go out, because also it's, when you go out, there's an obligation to do stuff just socially. Just, you know, and you can't be, you know, a crab when you go out and be like, you know, unpleasant to be around.
You just put your hand up like, don't fucking talk.
Right. You don't want to be that guy of like, oh, don't talk to me. Don't be like this. Just show up and leave. Because if I'm there now, I've learned to be like part of the hang.
And like, it's...
Because that's what you have to learn how to do. Like,
and it all could be gone before we know it.
Right.
So like when you do go out, it is just that, like just you, it's just be in the moment.
Be in the moment, right.
Because then these are the times that we're going to look back on and be like, damn, like I wish I stayed and had that extra shot of tequila.
Right. No, but like you want to have that moment. Yeah. Like I really fixed my approach to it because when I would go to the Brighton Bar, like I would leave. I would go home and watch wrestling on Mondays. And what would happen is a lot of my friends, like comedian friends, they'd make fun of me, like on stage and off stage. Like I liked being made fun of.
Yeah.
I liked sort of the ribbing that people would do. And then what would happen is I would leave and then people would try and do that didn't know me. They'd do it on stage. And it didn't offend me at all. It was just kind of annoying to Mike, the bartender, because I wasn't there. I'd be like home,
and you wouldn't be there to defend yourself,
and I wouldn't be there for like to experience it. And he would have to explain, and it would just be. So I ended up doing one of the last things before we stopped doing the Brighton Bar with COVID happening is I did a roast of myself. So I did that show, and that was just the Brighton Bar was amazing. They took care of most of it. They did like 90% of the work. They were fantastic to work with, and it was just my thing was like, I'm going to let people get all their jokes out, get everything that they want to do, and just be a better hang and be better at being there socially.
Yeah.
Because that was a big thing that I just had to get over. You know, it was very, you know, I talk about it a lot on the podcast. When I came in socially, like during doing comedy, when I came into like the previous to the Brighton Bar, but even in that time period, like when I would go to the Dog Pound, I would feel like I would say stuff or do something and put my foot in my mouth. And then I would be, like, so apologetic when I came back. I'd be like, oh, shit, I put my foot in my mouth. People think I'm an asshole. And then people would be like, oh, we don't remember that. Or we don't care about that. Or, like, I would be like... But I would put all this social pressure on myself of how to act, like, how I was supposed to act and interact with these people who were a lot older than me. So it was, like, it was very self-conscious of, like... how to interact and how to be that way. You know, now it's easier, but there's still that thing where, you know, you're not always going to get along with people. You're not always going to...
Definitely.
You know, you're always going to be people that are around that you sort of have to make do with and, you know, and try and coexist with. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I have enemies in comedy that don't give them a cold shoulder.
Right, yeah. And
I mean, like, it's different as, like, you know... as a female in comedy, because like, I've dealt with being like sexually harassed by other comics as they think it's cool.
Right.
Or because I joke about it on stage.
They think it's okay.
They think it's okay to put their hands on me.
Right.
So,
like, that's so gross.
Now finally, like me coming back into the scene, there's I won't be a people pleaser anymore.
Right.
And that's where me going away and doing comedy for a year somewhere else.
Right.
And coming back into a scene that I've known for a while, there's people that I'm like, you know, like.
Right. No.
Like, I don't have to talk to you.
Right. It's like.
And, yeah,
it's only how, just, the thing that I realized is there's only so much, you give them all the power. That's basically what you're doing. If you care about what people think that you don't really like, it's like, you're just giving them more power than they deserve.
And it's like, it sucks because it's like, you know that the comedy world deals with a lot of addiction, alcohol, drugs, whatever, you know, we all have our demons, but it's like, it kind of sucks where it's like, I've had other like male comedians, even female comedians, think like, you know, they'll get like wasted and then they could be like aggressive towards you physically.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, just because I make a joke about touching a wiener on stage doesn't mean you can grab my boobs.
Oh, wow. That's,
you know, oh, yeah, I've had, and now coming back into the scene where I've been gone for a year and I'm coming back into it and I see people that I'm like, you are not worth my time.
No, that's,
I actually that's hate your guts.
No, that's fair.
And now, like, but where you were saying, like, when you go out into, like, to do a mic, you feel like you do have an obligation to
be social,
be this person that everyone is because kind of expecting.
The hardest thing with it too is we have our identity on stage, like our sort of our stuff on stage, but just as being people, you're going to have sort of the reputation or whatever that people think you are.
Yeah.
So, and that was very tough for me when I sort of became like started to become like this cult figure a little bit, was that was very hard for me because I never knew if it was genuine. Because I grew up in a time where I was the weird guy in school, so when people would, like, you know, like they do now, they chant my name, Dweck, before I answered. I never knew if that was genuine.
Yeah.
I was like, am I the local town idiot, or do they actually love me?
Or do they really enjoy me?
Or do they really like me?
But
and
what's,
it's tough.
When you said something about, like, when, like, a newbie would come into the area, or someone who's just there for, like, a open mic, and then they would try to, like, roast you, people would defend you because you do have... I don't want to say seniority, but you have the history.
Yeah, I have the history of being there.
You have the history of consecutively being in the scene.
Yeah.
So when people do come from nowhere and they're like, think it'd be the funny thing to do to like roast you, and then they're like, no. Like,
and, yeah, and to me, on top of that, I just had to also like finding your comedy voices, you know, I tried to lean into it at one point, like the stuff that people were making fun of me, and then that didn't really fit with my on stage what I wanted to do at all, and it was just like that was really tough, because I just had to learn. It's the toughest thing when you're doing anything, I think, any type of art, and you're just young and you don't know yourself yet, and then you have to discover, oh, this is what I like about myself, this is what I don't like about myself, and when that is. When there are qualities that you don't like about yourself that people pick up on. And then, like, it's cool, like, if your friends make fun of you, like, you know, it's so funny. People would think, like, that Dan and I were enemies. But we're, like, the closest of friends. Oh. Like, when we immediately, like, met, he immediately started making fun of me, but in public, too. But people thought we hated each other. And it's like, no, I talk to the guy on Messenger every day. Like, and, like,
group chat.
We're super close friends. And people would sort of, I think, they saw that it was popular to do the whole roasting thing to me that everyone was doing, but the people that were doing it the most and doing it the best were people who were super close friends with me. And to me, the way I always explain it is I grew up in a time where everyone who made fun of me was not funny. So if a funny person makes fun of you, that's a way different experience of like, no, this person is actually good at what they do.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's like, it's different, you know, it's different how, like, when you're in high school and the seniors call you Dick because your name is Dick and, you know.
Okay.
It's like that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
But I've always, like, being in the comedy world, it's like when people, you know, I'm a girl.
Right.
I'm a loudmouth girl.
Right, exactly.
I'm a blue comic.
Right,
and
blue comic,
like, you know, so Pete and usually I was, like, hosting money.
Right.
You know, so, like, people would come in and I'm an easy target where, you know, like, I've always been an easy target.
Right.
So there's times where people really say like very mean things. Right. And it's not even funny.
I just wanted
to. It's just mean. And you're just like, that, really? That's, you're just going to say, like, I'm a dirty slut?
Right.
Like, can we have some creativity behind it? Like,
I just want to throw something to you. And just to say this, you know, publicly. I hope that I've never made you feel uncomfortable, because that would...
Definitely.
That would be...
No.
That is something that I always worry about around female comfort. I never want to make anyone uncomfortable. It's always been, you know, my biggest fear is, you know, to do that. But and I never want to do that.
You haven't. And if there was ever a time, I probably, since I've known you since a child...
Yeah.
I would never have an issue to say to you, like...
Don't do that.
You know, like, yeah, that's not funny or whatever. And
no, it's just, it's hard to know, like, things, especially with my autism and stuff. It's like, how do I know what I'm doing and, you know.
And that's where, like, because I do talk to you from stage quite often.
And to me, what I've always learned, like, through stage time is, like, as a wrestling fan, I kind of am able to, like, separate it. Like, be like, okay, this person's on stage, they're being funny. Mm-hmm. So anytime, like, it's the same thing with Caprio, like, anytime, like, they would say something, it's like, it's on stage. If it's on stage, it's not real. That's sort of the way that I put it in my head. Mm-hmm. If they actually had a problem with me, it would be in private that this would be going on. Yeah. But there's still that time where you're around and you're like, oh, did I say this wrong, or did I do that? And on top of, you know, how hard women have it in comedy, I'd never want to be that person that's like, you know,
makes it extra.
Yeah.
No, and you've never like, been one that's I've been crossed just, the line.
Yeah.
I literally had another comedian say to my face, he's like, you're not funny, but you're fuckable. And I was like, wow. Like,
yeah, that's like.
Like, what?
To me, I'm like.
That's very aggressive.
That's very aggressive.
It's very aggressive.
It's like, how do you even expect. What do you expect a person to say to that?
What do you even say to that? Like, right. Thank you? No. What?
I like punch those guys in the face. It's like, so, what the hell?
And that's where it's like, it also sucks, because it's like, when you want to defend yourself, are you just being, like...
Defensive,
oversensitive,
right.
Like, or is it... Like, I had another comedian grab my boobs in front of a bunch of other comedians, and no one said anything.
No one said anything. That's terrible.
I was pissed off, and I kind of made a little bit of a scene. But then I felt like the asshole.
Then you feel like it, yeah.
And then I'm just like, wait, why am I the asshole? Because my boobs just got honked.
Right.
And people saw it, and then no one said anything.
Right.
And they kind of, like, pretend like it didn't happen. Mm. And I'm like, cool, guys.
Right.
Like, it's already one of me with 12, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not cool.
It's not cool.
So, but now, like I said, like, when I was younger... doing comedy, like, I didn't want to be like the whistleblower,
right?
But now coming back into it, I won't
no.
put up with it.
And it's tough because people put a lot of action, like, it happens all the time. People put so much, like, excuse over stuff that happens.
Yeah, like alcohol.
I just mean guys in comedy of, like, people being oversensitive about shit.
I
think a lot of that gets conflated in a way that's bad. Of like, no, you're allowed to point out when comedy is bad. You're allowed to point, like, I consider what happened, not even comedy. That's just people being evil to me. That's like, that's like an evil thing to me to do to someone. Like, I hear that, I'm like, that's not good human behavior.
Yeah, like,
and we need to call that shit out and not just be like, oh, it's comedy. That's that's why it happened.
Yeah,
or,
exactly. Oh, they're just being funny.
Yeah, it's like, you can't do that. You gotta hold people accountable for shit.
I know.
And it just makes me so angry to hear that happened to you, because that's,
that
shouldn't happen.
But that's the world.
Right.
That's just what happens.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just, and does it probably makes me a better human or stronger or,
I don't think you have to view it that way.
Those
people are trash, you know? That's just my view of it.
It's just some people are just evil.
Yeah.
Evil garbage.
And the thing that's tough with that is,
the name of my Netflix special. Evil Garbage.
Evil Garbage. It's a very good name. Very fitting for... that's also very fitting for New Jersey.
Yeah, Evil Garbage. Evil Garbage. I like it. Was there anything that you wanted to talk base on before we like wrap things
no,
up?
No, we can wrap things up totally.
So you got
I got everything.
We nailed
everything that I wanted to talk about. I'm so happy.
Perfect.
You know, and I don't want to wait because my parents wait to eat. I'm very happy I'm very happy that you said I love lasagna. Fucking love it. So thank you so much.
Yeah. So we'll go have dinner. We'll chat with your parents.
It's awesome.
And I thank you for finally asking me to do this.
Yeah, for sure.
I just like to think that it just took you 12 seasons to get the confidence.
To get the confidence, totally.
To ask me.
Yeah, that's totally what it was. It was just the confidence. You know.
It's not that I didn't want you on the show. I just needed the confidence
to ask you.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Great. Thank you so much for doing this.
Let's go eat.